Welcome to Now You Know Politics. I'm Catherine Sussman. Today, Animal Justice Executive Director Camille Labchuk and I unpack Alberta's Ag Gag Bill 27 and Ontario's proposed Ag Gag Bill 156. Listen as we explain the nitty-gritty of why all of us around the world need to speak out against such laws. Camille and I discuss why it is our civic and moral responsibility to get involved, both for human health and animal welfare reasons. Thanks for listening. Camille, it's great to have you back on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm always happy to join, Catherine. Thanks for having me.
So for us, the months of February and March, we're focusing on factory farm animal issues. So I'm really glad to have this opportunity to hear from you on the subject of ag gag bills and in general, just what they are to get that message out for anyone who doesn't know, and more specifically, how they're suddenly cropping up here in Canada, first in Alberta and now here in Ontario.
Yeah, sure. So the history of so-called ag gag laws, and that's a term that refers to agricultural gag laws. It was coined by Mark Bittman of the New York Times. They have somewhat of a long history in the States, although a very recent history in Canada. So the first ag gag laws were enacted in the 90s in the States, designed to stop people from recording undercover videos on factory farms. So there was an ag gag introduced in Kansas, and I believe a couple of other states in the 90s. But they came to more prominence in the 2010s. So around 2013, states started enacting these bills. And the reason that they did this is because farmers were getting upset that they were being exposed for animal cruelty through undercover videos shot by employees of their facilities. So oftentimes groups like Mercy for Animals, Humane Society of the United States, Compassion Over Killing, PETA, they would have a volunteer go in, get a job in one of these facilities, wear a camera, and simply film what they saw and expose that footage to the public if anything untoward was happening. And tragically, as we know, cruelty is the norm on factory farms, and so typically there would be some pretty disturbing images that came out. And in the States, a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is essentially a very corporate-run organization, it started promoting this as a model piece of legislation and tried to get it adopted in a number of states. Many states rejected ag gag laws, but many others adopted them. And since that time, they've been challenged successfully in many court cases by a coalition of animal groups and food safety groups in the States. So they've been struck down now in Utah, Idaho, Iowa, Kansas just a few weeks ago, and there's an ongoing challenge in North Carolina too. And the reason the courts are striking them down is because they restrict people's freedom of speech. They're unconstitutional. And I believe the same thing would apply here in Canada. So Catherine, a bit more recently here, what we've seen is in response to increased activism around farming issues and increased public discussion about animal cruelty on farms and live stream videos that have emerged from these facilities, governments now in Alberta and Ontario and BC are looking at ag gag bills. So Alberta passed the first one in only 10 days in last November, passed without any serious debate or scrutiny of what it would do.
And is that because there just wasn't public awareness that this was happening?
I think that's the case. I think that it's the way the government presents this legislation. They're not telling the public, of course, what its true intent is, which is to conceal hidden animal cruelty on farms. They frame it in terms of two things, protecting food safety and biosecurity, and then protecting farmers' property rights. So they're making it an offense to gain access to a facility through a false pretense, which would shut down these undercover exposés. But they're pretending it's about biosecurity.
It's actually really interesting because I was listening to your podcast, the Paw and Order podcast, with you and your colleague this morning. And one of the things that really stood out to me was that was the irony of calling these places animal protection zones. So the farms are being called animal protection zones and the slaughterhouses are being called animal protection zones. And it's the trespassers who need to be stopped because they're somehow harming the animals.
Oh, it's completely Orwellian. The language is just frankly offensive. But you're right. They're characterizing these no-go zones as animal protection zones, and they're trying to pretend that this legislation is somehow about animal protection when it actually does precisely the opposite. It assists farmers in further concealing farmed animal cruelty. I think it's important to note as well that undercover employees and whistleblowers who come forward are essentially the public's only eyes and ears on farms. And the reason for that is that the government doesn't regulate on-farm conditions, and they don't oversee or monitor them either. So there's no government inspections of farms on a daily basis. So we just can't have confidence.
If you don't mind, let's just linger on that for a minute, because I feel like that is the most important thing here. We have this vast, vast industry of breeding animals, raising them, transporting them, and slaughtering them with what you're saying is essentially like little to no oversight. Is that what's going on? And no real enforced standards of animal welfare?
That's exactly right. We, as you point out, we slaughter 819 million animals for food in 2018. The 2019 stats will be out in a few months, I expect. And that doesn't even include fishes. Their lives are measured in tons. That's just land animals who we farm. And it's a partial picture. It doesn't include every source, but that's a pretty good estimate. And you're right. Their lives are just not overseen by the law. There's some general animal cruelty laws that would apply in extreme cases of abuse, but most industry standard practices, things like docking the tails of pigs without anesthesia, castration without anesthesia, debeaking chickens without anesthesia, cramming these animals into tiny cages like battery cages and farrowing crates for pigs, these are all standard practices that are accepted on farms and considered legal.
And they're all just normalized, yet they're inherently cruel. And it's just egregious that this is what's going on. I have a specific question. Do we grind live baby chicks in Canada? Is that something that happens here?
Yes, unfortunately it is. Yes. So the egg industry has no use for male chicks because they only want the females who can produce eggs after being confined in cages their entire lives. So when the males are born, or when they hatch from their eggshells, they are discarded and they're either suffocated to death in plastic bags or they're ground up in a large macerator. They're ground up alive.
And that is actually true and legal in Canada and occurring on a daily basis.
On a daily basis. It's happening as we speak. And Mercy for Animals did an undercover investigation into an egg hatchery a number of years ago in Ontario. I believe that was a Maple Lodge Farms hatchery or Maple Leaf Farms hatchery. I forget which one, but they got footage of what happens, and it's not pretty at all. These chicks are newborn. They've never even met their mothers before because the eggs are taken away from the mother hens who laid them. And as soon as they come out of the shells, they're thrown into a macerator and ground up alive.
But yeah, these egg gag laws, if they go through, then we have no mechanism to expose the kind of cruelty that's occurring like this. Is that correct, Camille?
That's absolutely right, Catherine. And the reason that it's so important that the public sees what's going on is because most people would prefer not to think that the government is not doing its job. They believe that there's probably oversight, things are fine. I mean, when I tell people that there's no laws pertaining to animals on farms, they often don't believe it at first. They just think, well, how can the government not regulate or oversee the conditions of animals? That people do care deeply about animals, even the ones that they want to slaughter and eat. So it's not acceptable to the public that legal situation exists, and it's not acceptable that it's non-transparent. And one of the biggest challenges in trying to get better protections for farmed animals is simply educating people about what's going on. Because of this lack of transparency, they often don't know. And one of the only ways to get that information out is when a whistleblower comes forward and exposes the truth.
So to play devil's advocate for a minute here, what is the intent for putting this kind of a bill into place? I'm assuming it's to protect the farmers. So if you could just go into detail about what exactly the farmers need protection from, what is the kerfuffle about this?
Well, the farmers are upset because there's been a number of incidents where animal advocates have trespassed onto farm property. They've gone inside barns that they don't typically have access to, and they've live streamed the conditions inside them. I mean, there's a great recent example just from December in Quebec. Some activists went inside a pig farm and live streamed the conditions that they saw. They got arrested eventually, but before they were removed, the images that made it to the internet were just shocking. They were pigs living in literal filth with rust all over the place, injured animals. It was one of the worst scenes I've ever seen online. So activists are going in there and they're exposing those conditions, and the farmers don't like that because, you know, understandably, it's their property. They don't want people on their property. So they've been pushing for some time for the government to do something additional to go after these activists. It's already against the law to trespass. And so when people do go onto farms, they're charged and they can be ticketed. And that's a risk that people, I guess, take when they decide to get involved in that type of activism. But the farmers have wanted something more. And because the government is so beholden to the farming industry, they're moving forward and they're doing this. So the other thing that the bills do, in addition to making it an offense to gain access through false pretenses, is they're making, in Ontario, that Bill 156 would make these so-called animal protection zones no-go zones, where if you enter onto them, you're subject to a massive fine of up to $15,000 at first or $25,000 for a second offense. So they've drastically increased those maximum fines up from about $5,000, which it was before.
Do you think that these bills have come about directly in response to the SAVE movement?
Yes. I think the SAVE movement and the anger that farmers have towards the SAVE activists, I think that has definitely come into play. So one other thing the bill does, and I haven't even gone through it in its entirety yet, because the Ontario Bill 156 is quite extensive and quite troubling, but it targets SAVE movement activists directly. It does a couple of things. So interestingly, one of the few areas where there actually are laws that apply to the use of animals is during transport and during slaughter. So SAVE movement activists are often outside slaughterhouses doing vigils, greeting trucks of animals. Yeah, so SAVE vigils can be a very powerful experience because people get to witness firsthand these animals inside slaughter trucks in their final moments. And the other benefit of doing those vigils is that they can often see violations of transport laws. SAVE activists regularly see animals who are overheating, who are freezing and have frostbite, animals with gaping wounds on their bodies, dead animals who've been stomped to death, animals who are just living in absolute filth inside these trucks. So when activists film those conditions and expose them on the internet and file enforcement complaints with the CFIA, that is a real public service. But the bill is trying to shut down those activities by making it an offense to stop the trucks, to interact with the animals on them, or to give them any substance. The Bill 156 also makes it an offense to give water to suffering animals on their way to transport. And this obviously is a direct result of the pig trial, when activist Anita Crines was charged with criminal mischief and acquitted for giving water to suffering pigs on their way to slaughter on a very hot day. And everyone who watched that trial and who read the headlines knows that compassion is not a crime. But once again, the government is trying to make it into one.
So it's not just on the property, I guess. So it's stopping the trucks as well, because the vigil I was at in Burlington recently, we were standing in front, but on like just on a main road in front of a slaughterhouse.
That's right. So these vigils take place on public property. They're not on private farm property. But what the bill does is makes it an offense to interact with those animals who are also on private property. Well, both parties are on public property, I should say. So we think that interferes with freedom of speech as well. That affects the ability of animal advocates to get their message out by exposing the conditions that these animals are enduring in a public place.
And it's really interesting, because one of the reasons that they're arguing is that this is somehow a stress to the animals. The interaction is the stress, not the fact that they're on their way to be slaughtered in transit trucks.
Well, it's ludicrous for anybody who puts an ounce of thought into this. Obviously, the reason animals are under stress is because of the horrible conditions they endure on farms for their entire lives, and because of the extremely stressful conditions during transport. Canada, although it does have transport laws, they are some of the worst in the Western world. In fact, after over 40 years, our government finally released new transport regulations, which technically came into effect this month. And those new regulations do almost nothing. They barely shortened transport times. They didn't do anything to fix the temperature problems, so animals can still be transported in open-sided trucks in the hottest days of the year, which, you know, as Canadians, we know those temperatures can get pretty uncomfortable sometimes. So imagine being stuck inside a truck with no air conditioner, climate control.
Why were those new regulations passed then if they were so watered down?
When the government started looking at putting new laws into place, it looked at the science. And I'll just give you one example. And we got this information through access to information requests. Not because the government released it, but the science said that spent hens start to suffer after 12 hours. Now, spent hens are egg-laying chickens who spent their lives caged, whose bodies are so depleted because of a lack of calcium, because of the ridiculous pace of laying eggs that they're forced to endure. And by the time they're sent to slaughter, their bodies are literally giving out. So they're very vulnerable. They're in a weakened condition. They're extremely vulnerable to dying during transport. And the science said that after 12 hours, these hens are at risk. So the government initially proposed that there would be a 12-hour limit on transporting spent hens, but the industry didn't like that. They lobbied, they fought back. They said that they demanded a 24-hour window, and they got that. In fact, when the final regulations are released, it's up to 28 hours.
If the hens are dead upon arrival at the slaughterhouse, do they still sell those hens for human consumption, animals for human consumption?
Well, for them, it's about risk. If there's a risk that the hens are going to die, but they're not for sure going to die, and they can still get more hens safely to slaughter by having a longer transport time, and they'll save money by doing that because they, you know, need to truck their animals to a certain slaughterhouse at a certain distance, then for them, it's worth it. If they were to have to stop and unload a truck of chickens so the chickens could be fed and have water and rest, that would cost them more money, and they simply aren't willing to pay that.
Another argument of the farmers is that interaction of any sort with a protester could lead to contamination or disease toward the animals. How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's hard to accept that as a legitimate reason for imposing such a punitive regime. I mean, anyone who's seen footage from inside a farm knows that often these animals are living in literal feces. The idea that farms are somehow clean, biosecure zones is just a fantasy, frankly, in my view. And, you know, that's been the excuse that the government has trotted out to pass this legislation, but I think it's just that. I think it's just an excuse. I don't think that's the real reason. I think the real reason is that they're scared that the public is, its opinion of agriculture is diminishing because of the cruelty that they keep seeing in these videos.
And is there any evidence to support the claim of some farmers being bullied by activists?
That's another thing the farm industry has talked about a lot recently. They say that activists are online bullying farmers. And, you know, I think they're conflating bullying with simply having conversations. Now, of course, none of us ever want to see anybody threatened or feel unsafe or, you know, doing what I think is actually bullying, which can be kind of a nasty thing. But I think what we're seeing mostly is just online conversations happening about whether it's right to be farming animals in the way that the farming industry does in this day and age. If anything, I find it to be the opposite. I'll be interacting with people on Twitter, other animal rights, vegan people, and the farmers will butt into the conversation and call us names. I mean, I've been sexually harassed on Twitter. All kinds of inappropriate comments have been made about people, just really, really nasty ones, and even death threats. So, you know, I think online bullies are a problem, but I don't see that coming from the activists.
What do you think, Camille? Do you believe that protesting in the way that SAVE protests occur and that sort of thing, do you think that is one of the best ways to protest against these kinds of activities? Or do you suggest other things in conjunction? What are your views on the best way to take action to help this?
Well, I'm not sure if I can say that there's one best way. I think there's a lot of different things that people can get active in doing, depending on their talents and their interests and their communities. So bearing witness to animals at a slaughterhouse vigil can be a very, very, very powerful experience. Many people are deeply touched by it and go on to do other things. One thing I always urge people to do is make sure that they're meeting as politicians regularly, making that a regular part of activism. And the reason we think that's so important is because on Bill 156 in Ontario, politicians are being lobbied every day by the farm industry. They have all of these commodity groups. They've got the dairy farmers, they've got the poultry farmers, they've got the egg farmers, they've got the beef farmers, pig farmers, and those folks are all getting in there and meeting with their local reps, they're meeting with ministers, they're making their views known. And the animal movement, frankly, doesn't even begin to compare to them yet in terms of our ability to get our message out. So the way to start changing that balance and shifting it and making sure that these types of laws aren't proposed in the future is to develop a relationship with politicians and let them know that we're reasonable people. We just want the right thing to be done by animals and they should listen to us.
So essentially what we should be doing here in Ontario right now, the bill hasn't passed yet, correct?
That's right. It's still in the first reading phase. So it's being debated on and it will go back to the legislature soon when the legislature resumes and then a committee meeting and then a final vote.
When do you think the timeframe of that will be?
It's hard to say because it's up to the government. The legislature resumes February 18th, I believe, at some point after then, but the government could choose to pass it quickly or they could take some time with it.
Do you think it's too late then for people to reach out, write to the premier, write to Doug Ford, write to the agricultural minister? Is it too late for those actions or is that still helpful?
Oh, it's incredibly helpful. In fact, it's essential. If there's any hope of amending this bill to remove some of the most unconstitutional aspects of it, it will be because they hear from people who are concerned about it. So please, everyone, do that.
And what about reaching out to your federal MP? Is that helpful as well? Or because this is managed provincially, is it better to contact your provincial?
Well, the provincial legislators have a direct role to play, but it's important for all legislators, federal and municipal too, to know that people are concerned about animal issues. So whether you meet with them or email them or call them about this issue or just another animal issue, one thing the federal government could do is regulate on-farm conditions for animal welfare. So that would be a good thing to remind members of parliament about, is that they should be concerned about that.
Well, Camille, thank you so much for everything you do every day and for taking the time to chat with us. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And thanks to you as well, Catherine, for everything you do and for getting the word out through the podcast.
I hope to have you back on soon.
Definitely.
Take care.